Donald Trump has said he is for and against everything you can think of. So I'm certain that he's been both for and against it. So that confused us, because they were running horrendous negative ads against us. Silly people for a free society, or whatever it is, it may as well say something like that, because it's so meaningless. Money in politics, like anywhere else, is sort of like water. You can dam it, you can block it, you can reroute it, you can evaporate it. I don't care what you do, the water is going to find its way to the bottom of the hill. We have flawed people. My goodness, we have flawed candidates.
Korrespondentene tilbake med del 2 av vårt intervju med Rick Tyler. Det skal handle om Political Action Committee på Speed, eller Superpack, som det heter. Og jeg har også med meg litt hjelp for å forklare dere litt nærmere om hva Superpacks er. Vegard Kvåle med oss.
God dag, god dag.
Og Mathias Ask.
Heisann.
Mathias, kan ikke du først ta litt sånn enkle trekk? Hva en Superpack?
Superpacks en kommitté som jobber på vegne av en kandidat, men som ikke kan samarbeide eller koordinere med denne kandidaten, så det skal være en viss uavhengighet. Men i praksis så funker det ikke sånn. Altså, disse kommittéene ofte fulle av folk som tidligere rådgivere eller nære rådgivere av kandidaten. Og det som har gjort dem spesielt beryktet i amerikansk politikk er at de kan samle inn så mye penger de vil, gjerne da fra rike milliardærer. Og vi vet jo navn som Sheldon Adelson for eksempel er jo et navn som går igjen, eller Koch-brødrene, ja. Som da kan bruke milliarder av dollar. Og dette er jo penger også som i USA så bruker man uttrykket dark money, fordi disse pengene vet man jo ikke alltid hvor det stammer fra. Og det har ført til at det har blitt enda mer penger i amerikansk politikk.
Ja, ikke sant? Det jo en veldig problematisk ordning sett fra mange ståsted. Altså, det åpner jo opp for veldig mange mistanker om korrupsjon, at man kjøper seg innflytelse, ikke sant? Og det liksom en mangel på gjennomsiktighet i forhold til hvem som har donert hva, og så videre.
I 2016 for eksempel, så var den superpacken som brukte mest, eller som i hvert fall samlet inn mest penger, og også brukte mest, het Priorities USA Action. Og da det ikke gitt for velgerne å vite, ok, hvem det de ute etter å promotere? Og det kan jo virke som om det skal være ganske enkelt, fordi man skjønner jo hvem de for, men veldig ofte jo disse reklamefilmene ikke for noen, men tvert imot mot noen. De graver opp dritt og går til angrep. Så den største sist var jo for Hillary Clinton.
Ja, og det er jo da spørsmålet også her, liksom, altså på en måte er jo at det sannsynligvis fører til en mye mer skitten amerikansk valgkamp, fordi man får, som dere sier, altså gravd opp veldig mye dritt i sånne negative reklamer, men også så jo spørsmålet hvor effektive de faktisk da. Altså når man ser på for eksempel den superpacken som Rick Tyler ledet for Newt Gingrich, så fikk jo han millioner av dollar fra Sheldon Adelson, men Newt Gingrich klarte jo ikke å vinne den republikanske nominasjonen allikevel. Nei, heller Hillary Clinton vant jo heller ikke presidentvalget i fjor, åpenbart.
Ja, ikke sant.
Nei, men et av kjennetegnene fra 2012, husker jeg, var jo at det var en del kandidater som blant annet Newt Gingrich som klarte å henge med i gamet mye lenger enn de kanskje burde, hvis man så på mange stemmer de fikk og hvor stor støtte de hadde på målingene, nettopp fordi, også hvor mye penger de samlet inn selv som kandidater, altså fra enkeltpersoner og andre grupper, nettopp fordi de hadde et superpack i ryggen, ikke sant? Og vi har jo også nå sett hvis du amerikansk politiker, så mener jeg at det ganske flaut at du ser en del av disse kandidatene som går på en slags frierferd til en del milliardærer, nettopp for å få pengene deres til en valgkamp.
Ja, absolutt.
Jeg må bare si rett ut at for meg så superpack synonymt med korrupsjon. så får dere gjerne protestere hvis dere veldig uenige, men den innflytelsen man får ved å spytte inn penger, og vi snakker ikke småpenger her, altså i valget i 2016 så ble det brukt 1 milliard dollar av superpacks på kandidater, og selv Trump, som jo selvfølgelig gikk til valg med at han var imot superpacks, og han var folkets mann, så han skulle ikke ha imot noen penger fra store rike menn, han hadde støtte på 100 millioner dollar fra en rekke forskjellige superpacks.
Ja. Mm. Ja, og som du var inne på, vi skal nå høre fra Rick Tyler, som ledet et superpack, så han ganske godt kvalifisert til å snakke om hva det dreier seg om. Han ikke kjempebegeistret for superpacks, men egentlig ikke for den samme, noen av de grunnene som Roy var inne på. Han mener jo at kandidatene selv burde ha lov til å ta imot så mye penger de vil, og at problemet med superpacks er at vi ikke at de kan samle inn så mye penger, men at vi ikke alltid vet hvor de kommer fra.
Jeg må si det var veldig artig å høre Rick Tylers perspektiv på dette feltet, altså.
Ja, absolutt.
Han snakker godt for seg, synes jeg. Og litt morsomt, faktisk,
ja.
Også.
Ja.
Så jeg tror like godt vi bare setter over til Rick Tyler.
Mr. Rick Tyler, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So, you've been involved in American politics for quite some time, so we figured there's no one better to explain to us what role does super PAC play in American politics.
Well, super PACs were an artifact of a Supreme Court decision called Citizens United. Broadly, Citizens United is a political theory. They're actually a nonprofit, and they're basically an education foundation, but they lean right. I want to get the date right. In 2008, I believe, when Hillary Clinton was seeking a nomination for the Republican Party, prior to that, Citizens United, who produces movies, and I had some involvement with some of their movies, actually, but not this one in particular. This was about Hillary Clinton. Now, the law says that there used to be these blackout periods, and Europeans are very familiar with blackout periods in politics, is that during a certain period of time before the actual election date, you are not allowed to advertise, and people are not allowed to advertise on your behalf. But this was sort of unusual, and it was a great test case because this wasn't really an advertisement. It was a full-length feature film, and it was all about Hillary Clinton, and it was not in the positive. It was actually quite negative movie about Hillary Clinton. And so they were sued, and it went to the Supreme Court, and the idea was, do we have freedom of speech to be able to produce a movie and distribute and sell that movie, even though its subject matter was a potential and ultimately a candidate for President of the United States who didn't win the nomination but was in the primary. So that's the core of the case. And Citizens United won that case. But the court, in my opinion, actually didn't go far enough. I agreed with the Citizens United had a right to produce a movie even if it contained the subject matter was Hillary Clinton, who was a candidate for president. And even if you were to say that the intent of that movie was to sabotage her nomination, I still think they had a right to produce that movie, because presumably people will be able to do it on both sides. And politicians have a history of protecting themselves from speech they don't like, and so that would fall into this subject. But what the court didn't go further to say was candidates have a right to raise and spend as much money on their own behalf, after all, this is their name on the ballot, for their own candidacy. So you got this hybrid sort of decision that outside groups, including groups that were able to take money from corporations and ultimately corporations, were now going to be able to donate directly, or shall we say, not directly to candidates, but could produce content, advertising, in the positive or the negative for a candidate. The rule always was you couldn't run an ad that says vote for or vote against. That was basically the rule. And now the Supreme Court decision threw that out and said you were allowed to do that and you weren't allowed to do it with corporate money. Therefore, was born the Super PAC. It was not a the Super PAC was not essentially its own idea. It was an artifact of this decision because money in politics, like anywhere else, is sort of like water. You can dam it, you can block it, you can reroute it, you can evaporate it. I don't care what you do, the water is going to find its way to the bottom of the hill. And that's what the Super PACs did. And now we have not just a trickle of water, we have cascading, roaring rivers of political money in the political system that is all outside the influence of candidates themselves.
And what is the negative thing about these super PACs and the way things are working today, in your opinion?
I think the negative side is that most people, when they look at advertising, it's not clear to them who is paying for that advertising and what the purpose of that payment would be. Presumably, corporations and others would donate money to present a message that they agreed with. And when you see advertising, you see on the bottom of the screen, because we were supposed to have transparency, paid for by whatever group it was, you know, silly people for a free society or whatever it is. It may as well say something like that because it's so meaningless that unless you're willing to do quite a bit of research to find out who that group is, what its purpose is, who founded it, and where it gets its funding. And that's where it gets very murky. That's why they call it dark money. And that shouldn't be. We should know who contributes to super PACs and have a clear line between who pays for it and where and what the sources of their revenue is.
You've already touched on it a little bit, but how have super PACs changed political campaigns? And what are the relation, or I guess, according to the law, it should be the lack of relations between the candidate and his or her super PAC?
That's a great question, because when I was first involved in super PACs, they were brand new. And I ran a super PAC, or I was very involved with a super PAC that was funded largely by Sheldon Adelson, who's a casino owner in Las Vegas. And they put roughly $25 million into a super PAC. And that was all designed to support the nomination of former Speaker Newt Gingrich's candidacy for president in that year. And because the rules weren't widely known, it was there were all kinds of questions about what super PACs could and couldn't do. We now know, I know a lot more than I did then, but our basic rule was we just don't have contact with the campaign or the candidate in any way, shape, or form, and everybody will be happy. And a lot of the media reporting was, you know, you can't coordinate with the candidate and you can't talk to the candidate. No, a lot of that's not true. So the basic rule is when a super PAC is not allowed and a campaign are not allowed to share with each other, really essentially they come in two buckets. One is messaging strategy, that is messaging what the actual message is and the vehicles to get out that message. You can't share that. So that is to say, we're going to drop a million pieces of literature in Michigan next week, and here's the message, so you don't need to do that. Okay, so either the campaign is going to say that or the super PAC is going to do that, and therefore the other entity would husband its resources and wisely spend it elsewhere. You're not allowed to do that, except there's a caveat to that, which is, if it's public information and everybody has access to it, then you can do it. So you can post on a website. You could actually go out with a candidate and film all day. You film him with his children and film him, you know, going to church and playing softball or, you know, doing all these things that make him look like a legislator, whatever you want. And you can post all those videos up on a website. And then you can point people toward it, and you can point the other campaign toward it and tell them where to find it. Now, because as long as it's public and anybody could download those clips, anybody can use them. So what happens is they're up there, and then the super PAC will download them and they'll use them in commercials. So again, it's like, you know, it's water will find its way to its source. And so, you know, the American people, I'm sure everybody beyond America is very creative, but Americans are very creative, and they will find a way to get around the rules. So that's a way to get around the rule. This led to a very funny set of circumstances when I was involved in the campaign. I went on, in New Hampshire, I went on the Fox News channel, the conservative channel here in the United States, and I went on with the anchor Shepard Smith. And Shepard had decided to challenge me about my position in the Super PAC, because I was essentially the face of the Super PAC. And Super PACs never really had a face before, so that was sort of new, too. You had someone speaking on behalf of the Super PAC on television. That was sort of strange. And he questioned that my claim that I had never spoken with Gingrich of the campaign, which was true, but he didn't believe it. And so we went back and forth about it, and it got pretty heated. And I said, well, Shep, the way I speak to Newt Gingrich is through that camera right there. And I pointed to the camera and looked straight at it. About a couple days later, the comedian Jon Stewart and the other comedian who now has his own show, but Stephen Colbert, who used to play on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, did a skit. And they were actually sitting across from each other, and they put a cutout of a television between them. And one was the candidate, and the other was representing the Super PAC, and they were saying, well, I can't talk directly to you, but as long as I can talk through the television, then you're allowed to. Now, technically, they got the law right. That is true. But it was very eerie how it mimicked exactly my conversation between on Shep Smith's show on the Fox News Channel.
That's funny.
Another aspect is, I guess, Super PACs have in some ways become the political hitmans of campaigns, because they always, I don't know if it's always the case, but it seems like a lot of time the, I don't know if you would call it the dirtiest ads, but maybe the most negative ads come from Super PACs, so the candidates has plausible deniability.
There's two reasons for that. I mean, one is that if the candidate can go out and just talk a positive message, and then the Super PAC is essentially bashing the opponent, the candidate has, as you say, plausible deniability, who will say, well, that's not me, that's the Super PAC, and as you know, I can't speak to the Super PAC, and we're not allowed to share messaging. Gee, I wish they could be more positive, but after all, this is America, and they can say what they want, right? I mean, you can hear what they're saying. In fact, that happened to our campaign. Newt Gingrich went on television in Iowa and said, anybody who runs a negative ad on my behalf will be denounced. That confused us. Because they were running horrendous negative ads against us, and we wanted to respond, and we felt we weren't allowed to. But then as soon as we got to New Hampshire, we said, we're not doing that anymore. And the second reason is money. Because candidates, again, as I described in the opening, are so restricted in how much money they can raise that it isn't really efficient economically to take, you know, $2,600 contributions and spend millions of dollars on television, whereas a Super PAC can collect millions of dollars in one pop and buy TV. And so it's much more efficient for Super PACs to buy TV. And, you know, for as much as people say they hate negative ads, they work and continue to work.
To what extent do you think Super PACs kind of let rich people buy influence? Buy their way into a campaign and buy their way into a candidate's, you know, future behavior, what the candidate may do later on. Like, what kind of ties do you think it creates between a candidate and wealthy people?
So, while it is true that someone can donate a lot more money compared to someone who, you know, can contribute $25, right? But here's how, yes, could there be corruption where someone spends millions of dollars and there's some, yes, that can, I'll readily admit we're human beings. We have flawed people. My goodness, we have flawed candidates and things like that can happen. But remember, most people are elected by their local constituencies, right? So they're elected by the people of a certain state, like the people of Virginia. And then the representatives are elected by the people of their congressional district. And even though one person can contribute a very disproportionate amount of money to that campaign, if that candidate is not responsive to the people who can actually vote for them, then they'll get themselves in trouble. Here's the second reason. When you have multiple major donors and both phones ring at the same time, and one donor wants you to vote yay on a bill, and the other donor wants you to vote nay on the bill. If you're in the business of peddling votes, you're going to get yourself in serious trouble. So you, so candidates have to remember, and I remind the ones I work with, is it is understandable that everybody wants access to high, you know, profile and people in power, and major donors are no different. But and while politicians may more readily take their call, they have to be very careful about a major donor having influence in a way that would lead to that would be corrupting.
So the money follows the political views of a candidate more than they shape the political views after the money is donated. I mean,
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not. I work with candidates, and I want to know what they believe first before we start looking at who's going to, you know, contribute to the campaign, because a candidate, and I've always said this, a candidate, you know, who stands for nothing will be for nothing, and then now we have a president who's actually exactly like that. So, it, you know, and we're watching it sort of play out in real time, because we do have a candidate who's not ideologically grounded and doesn't really have a governing philosophy, and that has led to all kinds of contradictions and policy contradictions and lack of progress legislatively.
If I remember correctly, he said he was against super PACs, but then he had super PACs.
No. Donald Trump has said he is for and against everything you can think of. So I'm certain that he's been both for and against it.
I'm just curious from the perspective of the donor who puts money into the campaign or into the super PAC. Sorry, what about like Sheldon Adelson after he put all of that money into Newt Gingrich's campaign and it didn't succeed? Super PAC, and it didn't succeed. What was his response then? Like, how did he take that?
Disappointment. I mean, putting money in. Well, here's the other thing about the secret about campaigns. We can go down the list and name all kinds of candidates with all kinds of money who didn't win. Mitt Romney comes to mind. In California, you've had any number of multimillionaire senators, candidates for senator, who didn't win. New Jersey, Corzine, ultimately ended in disgrace. So money, does money make it easier? Sure, it makes it easier. And every consultant will tell you that, right? But, I mean, it isn't. Good candidates are just good candidates, and the money usually will find a good candidate. Good money doesn't usually find bad candidates. It happens occasionally.
Speaking of candidates who didn't win, I'm curious if you believe that there is a difference in the effects of super PACs when it comes to which party you represent. For instance, Hillary Clinton had a lot of money coming in from super PACs, but was that only beneficial, or could that have hurt her amongst Democratic voters? That she, because Bernie Sanders didn't use it.
It's a good question. It's hard to know because Hillary Clinton was such a flawed candidate in many, many ways. And I mean, to compare Bernie's base to Hillary's base was just so different. I mean, Bernie's base was very, very active, and he didn't take PAC money, and he relied on very small contributions. And by the way, raised an enormous amount of money. I mean, that's if you had two candidates, one who's funded by a few super rich people, and one who's funded by millions of $5 and $10 and $25 donations, I'd take the latter any day, right? Because the rich person, they get one vote, and their vote can go either way at any time. I guarantee you, the person who gave you $25 is going to vote for you. It doesn't, you know, I don't care if it rains, snows, sleets, there could be a blizzard. If you gave $25, you were going to be there on election day, and they're going to vote. So we'll take those every time.
Did you have a question?
Well, I'm guessing a little bit. There's a certain irony, I guess, in Donald Trump becoming president as a multimillionaire, because I guess after super PACs were introduced, everyone thought, why would a rich person ever run for office again when they can just donate millions to super PACs and sort of be the, I guess, the puppet master was how it was described back then.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump is an outlier in the political system that I don't think will be repeated. There will be no other Donald Trump. No one's ever going to replicate Donald Trump. Donald Trump did a lot of things right during the campaign, and I think one of them was that he didn't try to hide his wealth or pretend that he was, something he really wasn't. Like he didn't pretend he was, you know, actually I'm just one of you and I don't have a lot of money.
I don't have a golf club.
Yeah, no, he went to his golf clubs and he flew his helicopter around the Iowa State Fair. Like that was so absurd that you would think no one would ever do that because, you know, these are pig farmers, right? And these are people showing their cattle, and these are not, you know, by and large, mostly wealthy people who are going to the Iowa State Fair. Some are. And then they have this guy showing off his wealth so ostentatiously. I think that was actually a brilliant move by Donald Trump, is that he's like, oh, I'm not going to pretend I'm somebody I'm not. And people just liked him. Of course, they liked him before that, too. He was quite a well-known name. But so, as I say, we could do away with super PACs tomorrow, not legislatively. All we would have to do is open up funding to individual candidates. That is, they could take as much money as they could, no foreign national money. That would be the only restriction. No one under 18 and no one who's not a U.S. citizen, and you could take all the money you want with one stipulation, that it is transparent and that it is disclosed on the internet within 24 hours that the check or the wire hits the bank. So as soon as the money is deposited in the candidate's campaign account, the clock starts ticking. You have 24 hours to disclose that money to let people know. Then people would know. They would say, oh, you know, he's the Coca-Cola candidate, or he's the coal candidate, or the Planned Parenthood candidate, or the anti-global warming candidate, whatever. You know, as long as people know, I don't have a problem with how much money. The problem we have now is we have the candidate, you know, and I think this goes for Democrats and Republicans or liberals and conservatives. We have a candidate who puts their name, fortune, and sacred honor on the ballot, and they literally have the least influence over their own campaign messaging if a super PAC gets involved. And I think that's wrong.
Det var altså Rick Tyler om super PAC. Dette var del 2 av et intervju vi gjorde i New York i slutten av januar. Jeg håper dere synes det var nyttig. Mitt navn Roy Kvatningen. Jeg sier på vegne av Mathias Ask og Vegard Kåle, takk for oss, og minner om at vi gjerne vil at dere følger oss på iTunes og Twitter og Facebook og også Instagram, faktisk. Takk for nå.
Ha det bra.
Ha det godt.